Hi, welcome to Not Another Marketing Podcast, where I'm talking to Brad Smith, the CEO of Wordable, and two content production agencies. Now, we're talking about being more creative when having to feed those algorithms with content. How do we keep that creativity going? Thanks for downloading. Keyword matching, increasing search exposure, being a content production line. These are kind of the things that a marketer or a copywriter has to deal with, and it can drag the creativity out of you. Now, in this episode, we're talking to Brad Smith about how to stay creative when we're basically just trying to feed algorithms with content. Not very sexy, really, is it, that? Brad runs a couple of content agencies and also a fascinating tool which is called Wordable that enables distraction-free writing and looks after kind of like all the formatting of the content and the posting of it to your CMS so you can just concentrate on the actual writing. Now, you can find Wordable at wordable.io. That's wordable.io. And don't forget to connect with Brad on LinkedIn. Listen, all the links... are in the show notes. Just open them up, give them a quick tap, and you'll be there in seconds. Can I quickly mention that Not Another Marketing Podcast is totally ad-free? I'd love it if you could give the pod a quick shout on social media, subscribe via your favourite podcast app. All the links and more podcasts are at jtid.co.uk/podcasts. Now, the first thing I asked Brad was, a lot of content now seems to be quite clinical, samey, sterile, very highly planned. Do you think we're losing some of that creative writing spirit?
I do. And the hard part is, I still think there's a fine line that people need to walk. And so that's the trouble, is if you are going to the expense, if you are doing a lot of content, it does ultimately need to rank well and need to be optimized for that. So the fine line is, how do you do that? How do you make it so that it matches and lines up with search intent and what people want to see? However, at the same time, like you're saying, how do you actually create something that develops recognition and some feeling in the person that's reading it, so that you stick out and they remember it, as opposed to, you know, just another article that's generic and you click out of and you never see them again?
Yeah, I've been doing a few podcast episodes recently about artificial intelligence and content marketing, about how you can type in a topic, a subject or something, and the AI will go out and scour the internet and find out all those little niche opportunities that aren't being covered properly online. And then it'll give you like an outline of, this is what you've got to write about, this is what you've got to write about, you've got to get these words in, you've got to say that. That doesn't really help that creativity, does it?
No. And it makes it worse. And what it does is it shouldn't. If you think about like what those tools are trying to do, it ideally shouldn't, but it often does, because the way marketers and the way content people and writers approach it, they tend to almost follow it like gospel, and they tend to be too rigid in their understanding of how to apply it. And I think that's where the problem lies often. And all these things get compounded when you think of, you know, people are busy. They don't have time to do like the extra legwork, the extra like brainstorming to kind of come up with what are unique angles or hooks or whatever that we should be including in this. What are interesting customer anecdotes? Can we just hire a cheap writer and get it out the door tomorrow? That's kind of the all this stuff ends up getting watered down, unfortunately.
So can we spend too much time analyzing the data? Do you think we need to sometimes maybe step back a little bit and I don't know, that old fashioned gut feeling, I suppose, isn't it? Go with that.
For sure. Yeah, definitely. It's you know, part art, part science, I guess. So if you think about even search, what is the goal of search? What is the goal of search engines? It's to provide people good answers, but it's more than that. So if you think of like, if I look for something local, like how do I get tires for my car?
Yeah.
I'm probably going to see the biggest brands show up, and you can say that's good and bad in that Google and search engines tend to prefer big brands, be credible.
Yeah.
However, if we bring our goal is visibility and branding, it's not just like exploiting some short-term algorithm update, if that makes sense. So at the end of the day, we still need to keep in mind, we are trying to drive a brand here. We are trying to create something that people actually search for by name. And that will, in the long term, help us rank for lots and lots and lots of things. And so we shouldn't kind of we shouldn't be too short-sighted and just look for that like exploitation of a temporary arbitrage, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, sure. Have you got any tips on how we can get those creative juices flowing when we're just staring at like an artificial intelligence report in front of us and it's saying right about that? How do we get those juices flowing? How do we get creative?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's kind of maybe bringing together a few different disciplines or looking at the same problem in a few different ways. So, for example, we'll often start with that. We'll still start with bringing in what should this content be about broadly and what type of information should be included in here? What should the subheads potentially look like? Just based on search intent, based on looking at what other content is out there. I think the important thing to drive home is that's just the starting point. So don't end there, which is what people usually do. That's the starting point, meaning we should be talking about these things. And then from there, it's like, okay, well, what's our unique angle or spin on it? And so that is obviously more of a copywriting and content approach of taking a look at like, well, what are some classic hooks out there? So internal mistakes that the reader could be making, external threats that could be harming their lives, or conversely, some simple hack or kind of like Zen-like feeling that we can give them by simplifying their life in a chaotic world. And then from there, it's like, okay, well, what is interesting about our brand or our customer base? And what are, I shouldn't even say our brand, because really what people care about is what their customers and clients have experienced. They don't really care about the brand.
Yeah.
So what are those stories? What have customers experienced similar to this? And how have we helped them achieve a better life in so many different ways, whether it's intangible and it's, you know, feelings or emotions based, whether it's, you know, hard data because we save them so much money. I think kind of combining different approaches like that is ultimately what helps. And then obviously it doesn't hurt to have someone involved who is somewhat of a subject matter expert. And that becomes more and more important the more technical or the more complex, you know, your product or service is. So does the person actually writing this content, do they kind of understand what they're doing and what they're saying? And do the readers, you know, can the readers sense that? Because smart, sophisticated readers will turn off pretty quickly if it seems like a kind of a freelance writer is just talking generally about issues that, you know, may or may not actually be an issue in the real world.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Do you think we should give ourselves time to write as well? By when I say that is I'm thinking more of like the environment which we all work in nowadays, which is, I suppose, quite fast paced in a way, which has been driven by a lot of the apps which we use in the workplace. Do you think we should give ourselves time to write?
Yes, absolutely. We work with something like 60 or 70 writers working across a couple hundred articles a month. And what we often know how long an article should take roughly if they're including so many things in it. An important part of that then is almost to treat them like you would developers in a sense, or engineers, so that you don't bug them. Like we don't want our writers on Slack all day. We don't want our writers emailing us back. We don't want our writers sitting on calls with other people critiquing the content or anything like that. We really try to create an environment where they have the space and they're able to kind of work on the hours that they are the most productive, all those sorts of things. Obviously they can't just write forever and spend forever on something. They need to like turn something out at the end of the day. But I think an important part of that is definitely creating an environment where they're not constantly distracted, which is pretty much at the world we live in.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Slack on their website brag about the fact that on average most of their users are connected to Slack for 9 hours a day.
Yeah, that's awful.
Isn't it just?
It is. It's. I have a love hate with Slack. We have a big remote team, so it's great because we can do everything asynchronously. But it's absolutely awful. I don't write much anymore, but I even still to this day will take a couple days a week where I'm completely off Slack and I just tell my team, like, don't even bother. I'll answer it, you know, in a day or two, just because it's so difficult to get anything to really focus on anything like writing. You have to be kind of zeroed in for a few hours at a time. And that's pretty much impossible if you have Slack notifications going off every 4 seconds.
Yeah, you mentioned about you've got figures on how long various pieces of content should take to write. Do you have those figures around? Do you know anything off the top of your head?
Yeah, definitely. So on average, so we do a lot of B2B, a lot of like semi-technical content. Roughly speaking, a 2,000-word article for us usually takes a writer somewhere between 4 and 8 hours. So again, these are kind of general guidelines. So if we know that, then we know, okay, this, you know, these writers at full-time capacity, because we have full-time writers too, should be able to do roughly this amount of content. A lot of things come into play. So if you're interviewing people, that might take a little longer, although it does cut down on the research. We also try to compartmentalize roles, meaning we might have, instead of the writer having to source a ton of images, we might work with a designer so that the writer can just leave a few clues as to where illustrations can happen, and then we'll have a designer come in afterward and you know, do it for them. So there are some variables in that, but generally speaking, 1,000 art. So what's interesting too on this is that if a 2,000-word article takes somewhere between 4 and 8 hours, a 1,000-word article still might take like 4 to 6 hours.
Sure.
And so that's also an interesting thing when you start thinking of like producing content at scale or at any high volume, is that just doubling word count doesn't always double time. And there are different like trade-offs. You still have to do, you know, 2 hours of research for the same 1,000-word article you might have to do for a 2,000-word article. So there is a little, there's a little slack, I guess, in the system where you don't always, you may or may not have time savings by increasing or decreasing word count.
Yeah, it's really interesting you give that 4 to 8 hours for a 2,000. But that sounds sensible to me. That sounds normal. I do talk to a few agencies who just want everything as fast as possible. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And totally. And you can't possibly concentrate and do the job properly if you're doing something as fast as possible, can you?
No, exactly. What happens is you end up getting something that's semi-rushed, but what that means is it's almost one-dimensional. So it's like, it's one point of view. You don't take into account counter arguments. You aren't able to pull in other subject matter experts to get different opinions. It's not like a well-rounded persuasive argument. And then the flip side of that is if you let people work too long on things, they start to second guess.
Yeah.
So they start to overthink it. It almost like gets in their head a little bit. And they start second guessing the arguments they are trying to make. So I think there is a happy medium that you try to define with writers where it's like you'll have enough time to work on something that should be realistic if you prepare in these ways. However, we do need to have some sort of hard deadlines just to kind of make sure that you're not letting things, you know, back up too much.
Sure. We've all been working remotely for the last year, pretty much. Do you think the environment we actually work in can help our creativity as well? So a lot of people like working from home. A lot of people hate it. A lot of people like working from a coffee shop or something like that. Do you think we should try and improve our environments that we actually work in?
Yes, absolutely. I think, too, for writers, when I was writing a lot, I found it was helpful to also switch that environment up. Because I always almost felt stale if I just sat in the same room or stared at the same walls. And so what I would often do is move around. Like if I was working on one article, I would go sit somewhere for 4 hours. And then if I was doing something later that afternoon or if I was doing another piece, I would go sit in a coffee shop for a couple hours. And so I would try to kind of like just mix it up and try to introduce some spontaneity. I'm one of those people that like working from home, but I also have an office that's just like a personal office.
Yeah.
And I still go to coffee shops and that sort of thing too. So I think it is important to find those types of areas where it's like, okay, in these types of environments, I might do this type of work. So I might do my calls in this type of environment, whereas I might do my heads down writing focused work in a completely different type of environment where I can kind of unplug from feeling like I need to be on Slack or feeling like I need to check emails, all those sorts of, or, you know, feeling like I need to help out with my kids, you know, all those things, all the real world things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's good to experiment as well, isn't it? Because you mentioned writing in coffee shops. I mean, I'm terrible. You put me in a coffee shop and you know, I open up my laptop and say, right, I'm going to do this now, the coffee shop. And I spend like an hour people watching and that's it. And I get absolutely nothing done in a coffee shop. Different things for different people, right?
Yeah, it's weird too, because I like working in coffee shops, but in saying that, I'll throw on like noise canceling headphones.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like I could still get some of the external stimulus with like action happening around me. But at the same time, I can kind of not get distracted because I can't hear anything else other than some music. So it is like a weird thing. And it's one of those, I don't think to bring it back to like the initial point of creativity. I think that's the hard thing is creativity is not linear. Like we can't plan it. and we can't pre-program it, unfortunately. And so I think you do need to introduce some, you know, you have to have that flexibility to figure out what's working that day, that week, that hour.
Yeah, because things have changed drastically, haven't they, in the way we work, particularly over the last 20 years with everything going pretty much digital. I remember walking around marketing agencies years and years and years ago, and you'd find people just sort of like walking aimlessly in the corridors, muttering to themselves, thinking of ideas. And the place was busy, it was noisy, it was loud. And now you walk into a lot of agencies and everybody's staring at a Mac and it's very quiet.
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny, too, because a lot of agencies are still set up with like open office floor plans.
Sure.
But you're still trying to get that quiet, that yeah. quiet atmosphere. So it's just to your point about environment earlier, I think companies are now paying more attention to that because of the whole work from home stuff and because of how offices are going to have to evolve.
Yeah.
Once people start to go back. But I do think it was like this weird disconnect where, you know, unfortunately, the Mad Men days, or fortunately, are over, and
yes.
and you're not waiting around for stuff to come back from the printer or whatever. There's not that huge slack in your day, so you have a different kind of problem now where there's too much information. You could do too many things at one time, and it's almost like you need to go in the opposite direction and figure out, okay, how do I block certain things out at certain times so I can really try to be efficient as possible.
Yeah, because office environments kind of like went a little bit too far, I think. I read a quote a couple of weeks ago, and I can't remember who did it now, but it basically said that like when you look at the big tech companies like Google, Apple, all those sort of things, you've got somebody who's desperately trying to do some real deep work in that corner, and they put a ping pong table right next to you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
how can I work?
It's pretty much like any article you read, any study done on open office floor plans just talks about how awful they are for productivity.
Yeah.
And of course, the good things about those types of environments is that, yeah, you do get people close and collaborating, all those things. But again, there needs to be maybe different spaces for what do they say in the UK? Different or horses for courses? Like
yes.
There needs to be different environments for different reasons, and open office floor plans and that sort of thing. Are often awful for the people who are individual contributors who are heads down working on deep work. And they're great for like bad managers who can just walk around and bug
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
But they're not great for the people actually doing all the work.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about software, because I don't think it really helps either with the creativity. When you boot up a content management system, whether it's WordPress or whatever out there, and you start, you look at it, it doesn't really give you a lot of joy, does it? I mean, they're not very friendly content management systems, are they?
No, they're not for a variety of reasons. They're not because they for example, like all these WYSIWYG editors that most content management systems have try to allow people who are kind of non-technical to jump in and format content. Hmm. The problem is it ends up going in the opposite direction and screwing up a lot of the formatting and screwing up a lot of the content and making it almost more difficult.
Yeah.
So you have that problem. You have problems of like version history, meaning, you know, did the editor jump in and edit that, or did the producer jump in and drop in images, or did the writer make the last edit and change? Is it actually approved before we can publish it? There's just, and also to it, it's challenging when you try to bring in different sorts of media, and then it creates more problems. So for instance, if you have a writer who has a good intentions, but they're dropping in these massive image files, then that's going to really slow down your sites. But there's no real like constraints on them either. And so it just introduces a lot of different problems. And we often, we do a ton of content every month, and we don't do any work inside a content manager. Or management system. We almost purposely try to keep it lower tech and use Google Docs and keep it very simple. And then we do all of our back and forth, all of our collaboration editing in that. Once that's approved, then we almost think of like the final draft, final version as the one that gets pushed into the CMS and eventually published. So yeah, they're amazing for what they are. I always say like WordPress is great for everything but writing.
Yeah.
It's like, it's great for all the website related things, but for what it was actually created for, blogging and writing, it still is not great.
Yeah. You can tell it was designed by software developers and not writers.
Totally. Yeah, we are seeing a lot of new of these headless CMSs. So thing or like no code ones like Webflow that are popping up, which are I think are helping. I think are helping get us, you know, get us closer to the promised land. But yeah, we're still not quite there yet. And all this stuff gets compounded when you do have a lot of people involved. But that's a lot of writers, a lot of editors, or if you have a lot of content that you're just trying to push out on a, you know, daily, weekly basis.
Sure. So do you think we spend too much time in our CMS on formatting and adding tags and all that SEO stuff that we usually forget to do on an article? Do we spend a bit too much time on it? Is there an easier way to get around this?
Yeah, definitely. There's a few things. I think it's a good segue. I appreciate it. we have a tool called Wordable that I think will solve this. But so here's the problem that we see. So we do something like 3 or 4 articles a month. And that, again, that's across like 60, 70 writers, a lot of people involved. And we have to manually upload, format, optimize content for people in their CMS before it goes live. We see on average, it takes 30 to 60 minutes per article. Just for moving the content over, making sure the code is clean, adding in images, optimizing those images, meaning whether it's alt tags, adding in alt attributes for web accessibility and SEO, whether that's image compression, like doing all the extra kind of on-site, on-page SEO that people should be doing that they often, you know, don't if they're cutting corners. So if you're doing, you know, 30 or 60 minutes per article times 300 or 400, you could imagine that gets pretty costly and pretty expensive pretty quickly. And the other problem too that we see is if we're even delivering a lot of content to like a customer or clients, what often happens is they have a huge backlog and bottleneck. So they might edit it internally, but then they're often going to have, I don't know, a dozen documents sitting in Google Docs that they've already paid for like 3 months ago that still haven't been published. And it creates this like massive bottleneck for even, you know, companies that are doing a much lower volume than the ones I'm talking about. So we acquired a tool called Wordable that is going to hopefully automate this for everyone. And so that's what we're working on a lot lately. So basically you can just pull in content from primarily Google Docs now, but in the future, any source, publish to any CMS, and then do a lot of these optimizations and things that people should be doing, like your image compression or any of the on-site optimization, basically just automating all that stuff to make it hopefully pain-free and take, you know, seconds instead of hours per article.
Sure. So we don't necessarily have to do all of that tagging and image stuff ourselves. Wordable will do that for us.
Yeah, exactly. There's a couple check boxes basically. So it's like, do you want image compression? Yes or no?
Right.
And we'll just do it all. And then there are some things obviously that you'll need to fill in. Like if you're adding in alt text attributes, I mentioned that earlier, but kind of like glazed over it. Basically, that's for web accessibility. So if images don't show up or if people can't see, then that's going to help tell them or describe what the images are about. That type of information and metadata, like extra information on a page, also helps search engines because it tells, again, search engines can't read images either. So it helps tell them and describe what these images are about. All those types of things, obviously, you can kind of customize and fill in, but it hopefully should be a lot less painless than having to do it before, where you move the content over, manually upload each image, and then you have to go back and go into each image and kind of like add that. So you're kind of able to almost manage the whole content publishing process in one go, select the author, select the category, all that stuff within a few clicks, again, as opposed to having to jump around a bunch of different places manually.
Sure. So you'd like set that up at the beginning and then publish to that as such.
Yeah, exactly. And then we're getting into the a lot of automations too. So essentially, you can preset a lot of these things if you have a pretty consistent way you want to publish content. And then all you need to do from there is either just like drop content in a, you know, in a specific folder, or do something like that where it's just, you know, one click and basically all your settings are applied every time.
Sure. I take it. It'll retain all the things like the headings and the and the bold and emphasis and italics and things like that. It'll pull that over from the original document and push that forward to the CMS as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So we'll leave certain HTML and CSS elements like headings, like paragraph tags, like links. So all that type of like normal stuff that you'd want from, you know, from a writer or from a content perspective, when you're reading something, you want bold, you want italics, you want tables, all that stuff gets retained, but at the same time, we'll try to extract all the other junk that usually gets thrown into like a lot of span tags and div tags and other things that get thrown into WordPress or one of these editors that end up, you know, kind of screwing everything up, frankly.
Yeah, tables are not fun in WordPress, are they?
No, they're not. Like I said, having to edit complex documents, big documents in WordPress is just not enjoyable. It's just not an enjoyable experience.
No, not at all. Brilliant. Brad, thanks ever so much for spending some time. And where can we find Wordable? Give me your website and all the social media bits and pieces.
Yeah, definitely. So Wordable is available at just wordable.io. And you can go on there and sign up and do a trial and all the fun things. There's also like a little demo type thing on there that'll kind of walk you through or show you how it actually works. Because, again, this is like not a new problem we're trying to solve, but it definitely is a very specific problem that if and when people feel this pain, they feel it very distinctly. And you can find, I'm on LinkedIn at BS Marketer because those are my initials. And also because you know, marketers are full of BS sometimes too. So yeah. I thought that was funny. And I'm on LinkedIn there. And like I said, wordable.io. And I'm pretty sure Wordable on all the other sites are just, you know, Wordable.
So. Fantastic. Brilliant. Brad, thanks ever so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Thanks again to Brad for his time. Don't forget to check out Wordable. All the links are in the show notes, so give them a quick tap. If you've enjoyed this episode, you can subscribe for more on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, your favorite podcast player. It's everywhere. Just search for Not Another Marketing Podcast. Thanks for listening.